Welcome to the Business of Race podcast, where we examine issues of race and racism, how they impact businesses, and what organizations can do to effectively address those issues to create a better working environment for everyone. I'm your host, Regina Newkirk Rucci, the Director of Equity for 90 Forward, a racial justice and equity nonprofit based here in Jacksonville, Florida. And today, I have the distinct pleasure and privilege to be joined in the conference room by Gracie Simmendinger, who is the CEO of Leadership Jacksonville. Welcome to the conference room, Gracie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. So, you know, I love to just jump in and get right down to business. And so today, you know, you are a head of a leadership development organization. And one of the things that I constantly hear is that organizations really struggle to identify leaders of color. We don't have anybody who we don't, there's the issue with the pipeline. We don't have that talent, et cetera. And I think there are a lot of barriers that we can address that contribute to that perception. But today I really want to talk about developing leaders of color. So obviously the majority of this is going to be talking about what organizations can do for current employees to develop and mold them and grow them. But let's start with the first thing in getting some potential talent in the door. So as I'm hiring, I might not be hiring the senior vice president, but if I want to have hiring strategies that would give me more options for who could be the senior vice president in 8 years, what are some things that should be a part of my hiring process, or what are some talents that I should be looking for in, particularly in employees of color, to look for those leadership traits?
I think for me is as I've hired employees over the course of my experience in the nonprofit sector, I'm always looking for life experience, because I think that you can have great accolades when it comes to your schooling or graduate school. And so, but to me, the real work gets done when you're caring for yourselves and your families and, you know, have worked, a number of years. And so one of the suggestions that I offered to my previous employer at the time was, you know, do we really need a bachelor's degree for this position? Do we need an associate's degree for this position? Will a high school degree be enough, as long as there's experience associated with that? And so that was a way for us to cast a different net, I would say, than just saying, okay, you need to have this sort of level of qualification. I also think that when it comes to identifying people of color, you're really looking outside of, for instance, me, my specific circle of influence or connection. And so how can I position roles or volunteer opportunities in ways that I'm, reaching folks from different communities or different backgrounds?
Right. So you really want to ensure that you get a diverse pool to start
with. Yes, right. Absolutely.
All right. And so, I find it interesting that you're talking about life experience. I've actually had a couple of conversations where people are saying, we're really looking at that college degree required, because I think that's sort of a default position. Mm-hmm. Do you really need a college degree to do this type of work? Or could experience really lead to that? But you also mentioned life experience. What are some life experiences or things that you might look for in that category that would indicate to you that person has leadership potential?
Gosh, right off the bat, Regina, I just think of somebody uprooting their family and moving to a new city and deciding, that they made that decision to move and really getting roots in a new and different area. Mm-hmm. To me, that exemplifies a lot of leadership, because, you know, you're leaving behind what you have known, or pulling your kids out of school or something like that, but you have decided to raise your children or to move your life into a new area. And I think that is just one example of ways that people can show, that they're adventurous. Mm-hmm. And, they're willing to take risks, but they know that they have what they they have what it takes to create a new life and a new home for themselves. And so that is just one example of something that I think of when I think of, you know, people just doing, you know, a little bit of life flavor, as opposed to maybe you've always are from here and always grown up in a specific neighborhood. Well, what have you done outside of your neighborhood? I think volunteerism, especially grassroots volunteering, giving back, is another way to show leadership or at least an interest in community service, and especially in the work that we're in, you know, nonprofit work that is really important to ensure that that's a value that employees, carry, for both Leadership Jacksonville and really the sector as a whole. And then I would also, share that, if anyone has specific mentoring or menteeing relationships with individuals. So not only mentoring, you know, younger individuals, but also have talk about how they have mentors or, you know, confidants in their lives that help them in various situation or just a sounding board. That's another way showing leadership, like, right, we can't do it all alone.
Right.
But we certainly, I think, know enough people that may be able to offer us some great sound advice.
Mm-hmm.
Just using those examples as ways to say, you know, this is leadership, right? We're looking sort of externally and, having more self-awareness to say, you know, I'm seeking, you know, external guidance or just help or support. So life is hard.
Right. Right.
So asking for help is a great example of that.
But that's really interesting because I think all of those examples that you named are not what would be the typical thing that you'd be like, yeah, this is going to be a great employee. But they really do exemplify those characteristics that you want in an employee. I want somebody who's going to be willing to delve into something new, to be willing to take a risk, right? To be willing to be uncomfortable in a new environment.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's exactly what they'd be.
Right?
It's a new job, right? really sort of saying, okay, this isn't going to be the same, and being able to take those temperature checks to understand that, okay, this place is different than this one, so I have to do this differently and dig into all of the things that are required when you move to a new city. Or the fact that you said, like, mentoring really shows some initiative, right? Mm-hmm. As well as the ability to self-assess and to say, I don't have these skills and I need somebody who can really help me develop these skills, which is, again, what you want in a leader, somebody who's going to know what strengths they bring to the table, but also know their areas of weakness so that they can bolster those and they're less likely to lean into those areas in making decision making. So those aren't typical things that people look for, but they really could be solid indicators.
I would also share that in a general traditional interview, I'm not sure that those questions are really asked. To mm-hmm. get to the root of some of these things that we're talking about today is, you know, if you're traditionally just going through, you know, the same, you know, checklist of questions, you're not really getting to know the depth or the breadth of a person or their, you know, individual values if you're not asking some of these questions that are unpeel the layers of about someone's life or some of the leadership abilities they've you know, demonstrated throughout the course of their, you know, tenure.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a extremely valuable point that not only do you need to look at different things, but maybe we need to ask some different questions. Mm-hmm. All right. So we've done this great job of diversifying where we're putting our notifications out to get more diverse candidates. And we've changed some of our interviewing practices so that we're looking at different things, valuing the same things, but looking at them coming from different places. Mm-hmm. And now we have more people of color in our organization, but maybe they're at lower levels because we see even in some of the most diverse organizations, when you start talking about leaderships, those decision-making roles, senior roles, you know, we're talking around 3-5% of people of color. So what are some things that you would do? And even in Leadership Jacksonville, what are some of the things that you do to develop and grow leaders, even in your own organization, because that's going to be the best place to get those people from is right in your own backyard, right? So what do organizations need to do to help those leaders grow?
So I think it's twofold and they're a little contradictory. So let me explain them both. I think one is, you know, when you recognize talent, you feed talent, you provide more opportunities for you know, individuals to take on, you know, other projects or, you know, more comprehensive projects and really shine. Like my role as an as a executive director is to ensure that my team's successful because that makes me look good. That makes us all successful. So I would say that in providing additional opportunities for those that just have an interest and curiosity to learn, like how do you continue to feed that? Because you don't ever want that to dimmer. Or to dim rather. And so continuing to feed that. But I would say that oftentimes you hear of people that are making the decision on behalf of other people. Well, so-and-so is too busy. We don't want to give them additional work because X, Y, and Z. But I don't think you as a leader need to make that assessment and saying, oh, well, why don't we let them say they're too busy or say this is a project they may or may not want to work on. So having those open dialogues and the opportunities that are still, you know, of need to the organization. One other thing that I will caution in regards to this is the compassion tax. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have heard of it before, but it's essentially so many of us give and give and give. And so there is a tendency to, oh, well, so-and-so can handle it. Oh, she's great. He's great. You know, we'll just pile it on top of people until mm-hmm. it becomes too much of a burden and the workload is significant enough where some team members don't feel comfortable saying no or asking for help. And right. So I think that consistent dialogue and ensuring that that people have the correct resources and are also provided with additional resources, not only to get the job done, but also if they're doing more work, they should be paid for more work.
Right, right. And right? We tend to go back to the employees that are really productive, the ones who get things done, the ones who don't give us a hard time about it. And then I've also noticed in that, even with the compassion tax, they're so great. I don't want to lose them. So this is a employee who has performed and performed and performed over and over and over again, but because they become such a vital part of your team, then you don't want to consider them for promotional opportunities or another job that may be outside of the department that would be an area of growth for them because you need them.
Selfish, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. But
I know that's a reality, but mm-hmm. if you think about what you just said, it's very profound and it's very real. But I also think that we talked about, you know, dimming someone's brightness. And so if they get to a point where, you know, they're burned out and don't have the opportunity to take on additional responsibilities or move up in a company or move to a different department, I mean, you've already lost that person, right? They're going to be looking elsewhere. And so, again, I think it just goes back to effective communication between the manager and the employee to really understand, you know, what is a motivator? Like, is it additional time off? Is it, you know, additional, raise? Is it like what really ensures that the employee knows that they're, you know, they're valued and the organization needs to take care of them to ensure that they don't leave. But I do think that an organization can be stronger if an employee is moved to a different role within right. the organization.
That's much better than not having the employee at all, which you run the risk of doing if you keep them, you don't promote them, and you burn them out.
And it's, you know, of course it's easier said than done, but of course cross-training is always an opportunity if mm-hmm. you do have a shining star that is doing really well but has an interest in moving to a different area, or different department, or is up for a promotion. You know, having the ability for them to be a part of the hiring process for their replacement and helping to bring them up to speed and ensuring that, you know, the level of quality and care is taken to whatever, you know, they're no longer going to be doing. That's an option too. But of course, that takes more time than just leaving somebody in the same role. But I think that also shows that you care about them and their contributions. And you also know, like, you're doing great work. Would love for you to train this other person to take over for you because I trust you.
Right.
And you provide so much value. And I know that you'll help identify somebody that has the same level of care and interest in these specific responsibilities.
And that's a proactive response, right? Mm-hmm. Like really thinking ahead, two steps ahead when this person is offered another opportunity or really wants to grow, that we're ready for that transition. Mm-hmm. But I also think going hand in hand with that is career pathing conversations, mm-hmm. right? Really understanding where employees want to go and creating the roadmap to get them there. And not just, so if you want to become the senior vice president of communications, you're going to need to be the vice president of communication, which means you're going to then need to be the director of communications. And you're going to, you know, not just that, but if you want to become the senior vice president of communications, then we're going to need to have some opportunities for you to have some speaking engagements. We're going to need to make sure that you're involved in the development of some marketing material so you can understand what goes on too. So understanding the knowledge base that's needed, as well as the connections that are needed in the organization to help move people to those roles.
I think it's twofold too, Regina. One is the key to that is transparency. Mm-hmm. Like if you want to get here, here are all the steps, you know, that we would like to provide you, you know, opportunities to serve and get experience in each of these areas. But you also have to like put your money where your mouth is if you're going to say, okay, now you are trained to be at this level. You need to ensure that there's an opportunity for that individual to move up or mm-hmm. they will move on. The second thing is sometimes, especially for those that operate in smaller shops, we outgrow positions. Mm-hmm. And it's okay if, you know, the next position, you know, your next promotion is outside of the organization that you're currently working for. And I know for some organizations and leaders, it's taboo to have those conversations, but it's reality. People have options, especially now. And so if we can have conversations with our, you know, shining stars and knowing, I mean, we all know right. someone who's talented and that has options, but if we know that, them moving on to another role will most likely be outside of the organization, what prep work, what continuity planning, what, you know, hiring or cross training, what you talked about, can we do to ensure that, you know, that piece of the puzzle within the organization is taken care of while this individual also has the opportunity to excel in their career moving forward.
So Gracie, one of the things I was thinking about with small shops is lots of times the job that you want is your boss's job,
yep.
right? And so a lot of people are uncomfortable. I think I've had one supervisor who was really comfortable in talking about that, or I should say was open in talking about that. But for people where the move up is my role,
right?
I like my job.
Threatening.
Right.
It can be.
So how do I manage this cultivation of leadership but still feel, okay, I'm good. I'm secure in my job. And I don't take that as a threat to my own position.
So I think it depends on the person. Some people are grooming for their replacement, right, depending on where they are in their career. So that makes it a little easier because you know eventually you'd like to retire and identify somebody that you feel comfortable taking over, that would take over for you. I think for me, I still feel strongly that, you know, elevating high-performing team members is the way to go just because, like I said, like my team does great, like I do great. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if I felt threatened by someone who had an interest in my position, I think, you know, that could get a little squishy. But I think, again, providing opportunities that are really within either the skill set or the interest area of team members that are looking to expand, you know, the skills or the responsibilities of what they're doing now or capable of doing, and also helping to grow the organization and you as the leader establishing the vision and having them help execute is still a win-win. So I don't know if I have the direct answer for, well, perhaps if somebody's like gunning for your job, that may make things a little bit more challenging. But again, I just think how important trust is to an organization and to, you know, a supervisor and employee relationship, and then also effective communication mm-hmm. and giving that constant like feedback both ways. Right. And I think that can be hard too. You like a boss always, you know, wants to give feedback one way, but also, I can't be a better boss if you don't give me feedback too on ways that I can be a better boss and right. better support you in what you are going through.
And I also think taking that out of the evaluation, like the evaluation should not be the only time you're getting feedback.
No.
And it's not really the time to have the, let me also tell you what you're doing wrong with your job. Nobody's going to do that because I want a really great evaluation.
Right. I was going to say, no one's going to be honest with you because right. they're just going to hope that it's a great, you know, a great review and, you know, hopefully they get, you know, merit increase or a mm-hmm. bonus at the end of the year or something like that. But I think that constant feedback throughout the year, maybe even either structured or unstructured comments and conversation once a quarter, just so you can, because if I don't tell you that I'm mad about some process that you've been doing it this way for a year, how do you have time to correct that?
Right. Right.
What do you do with that information, right? So unless we have those conversations in ways that I can pivot and be a better manager to you, mm-hmm. or, you know, we change the process in this way that makes more sense, you know, for the organization or efficiency or something, then, you know, we're not really able to. And that's it. That specifically is also just an incredible thing that you can, in a formal review, talk about. Hey, I gave you this feedback 6 months ago, and let me tell you, like, you know, right. like you've, you know, turned... you know, took that information and feedback like great. And, you know, look at where we are now and look what you'll be able to do together.
And I think that also says something really about how much you value someone, right? Mm. That constant feedback, because I'm telling you these things, I want you to improve. And then in a formal review process, when you're acknowledging, I see the improvement, right. I see the change, or you ran into this hurdle, what happened? Let's talk about it. You know, it really does give more of a sense of being invested, mm-hmm. and I think it really increases your retention likelihood. So that two-way communication is extremely important, and that ongoing communication mm-hmm. is extremely important.
Absolutely.
So one of the things that I found interesting, I was in a group mentoring program at a corporation, and they did a C-suite tour. And they said it's really important that the people in the C-suite know who you are and you know who they are and what they do. So we would just go, the group, we had a meeting with, you know, the president and the chief legal officer and the CFO, the COO, all of these people in the C-suite. And they met us all and they told us a little bit about their experience and how they were able to get to the position. And I thought that was really extremely valuable, often overlooked, the exposure element, mm-hmm. because it means something to me that, A, I've heard the stories, people I want to, you know, do this type of work. I want to rise to this level. How did you do it? I learned from that. But it's also something when the president sees me in the elevator and then he says, hey, Regina, how you doing? Right. So what role does exposure play in leadership development?
Huge. I mean, what's the saying? You can be what you can see. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't have exposure to, you know, C-suite executives or anyone that is at that promotion level that you have an interest in, I mean, when we talked about mentoring, mentee, like that feedback on earlier, you know, when you think about, well, if you want to reach out to someone who is, we talked about the SVP of communications for a company, be great to establish those relationships now so that when it comes, you know, a time to help, you know, career map, you have, you know, a confidant or somebody that, you know, is at least an acquaintance where you can take out to lunch mm-hmm. or grab coffee with, or, you know, spend 15 minutes even in the break room and pick their brain about what projects they're working on, what advice they may have for certain situations. I love that concept of doing that sort of tour to meet those that are at those levels, because I don't think they often think about people outside of their departments or really mm-hmm. at their C-suite level, because right. those are the majority of the meetings that, you know, they're with those individuals. And so for them to broaden a little bit, and that just increases the scope of awareness they have for the organization mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's some different opportunities, some different names that may come to mind when, hey, this committee is forming, or we're going to put this group together, or with having this little think tank, right? And so those opportunities come up just by proximity and name recognition.
Right.
And so, again, that way to develop that those leaders and that talent, and giving them that exposure. I don't know anybody who is in the C-suite that their first time in the C-suite was when they got the job, right? So really putting those kinds of things into place, even in small ways, I think can really be just have a tremendous impact. But that also goes back to knowing where your employees want to go. And I just feel, I feel like those conversations don't happen enough. I don't know if people, again, really want to keep you focused on the job, if they don't know how to have the career pathing conversations. But I really feel like a lot of supervisors have no idea where their employees want to be 2 years, 5 years, 20 years from now.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't know if we're having enough of those conversations. I almost wonder if it could be a symptom of, well, I mean, we're all different, right? But if a leader has their eye set on, you know, five steps ahead, they may not be thinking about who is going to be taking over them, because they're really trying to scale up to where they want to be and having more of a selfish mindset or, you know, individualized mindset and what that looks like. So that could potentially be a reason that it's not something that is more discussed or, you know, developed an awareness around, you know, the, I also think it needs to be a component of, you know, the HR department and really saying like career mapping is something that every single department and every, you know, manager is going to take part in. And you have to, you know, have this conversation with your employees. It's not just you telling them what their career path looks like, but let's discuss what options could be.
And dealing with the fears that come with that, right? You don't want to lose people, but you do want to groom them. You want to grow them. Otherwise, they're not going to stay with you anyway. And we want to maximize what we are able to receive from employees in our organization.
Right. And I think a component, too, of these conversations is invest in the development of employees. And so if there is a specific training or, you know, even just a graduate course or a certificate, just anything that could be a benefit, set aside those dollars, because that's another way to invest in knowing we, you know, we see value in you. We, you know, recognize you. This is of interest to you. And we also know it's going to help you get to your the next, you know, point in your career.
And letting employees know that that's available.
Yes.
I have been astounded. So many employees are like, oh, I want to do this course. Oh, we had money for you to do that. You didn't tell me. I didn't know that that was available to me. I didn't know that I could tell you I wanted to go to this training. I just go to the trainings you tell me I have to go to.
Right.
So, you know, that there is the availability to invest in your interest if it's business related. Even if maybe it's not specifically with this department, you may still be gaining some skills that we could use. But there are these opportunities available if that's the case in your organization.
Right. And I think just from what I learned in my short time with Leadership Jacksonville, we're a fairly small organization. And so even if we don't have specific earmarked budget for X, Y, and Z, I have just told the team, like, if you have an interest, let me know. Like, it's, I feel like everything's a conversation, right? I got to stay in budget, right? But still, even if it's something that is not budgeted for, perhaps you may need to go to your supervisor about increasing budget for a team member that has an interest in doing something. I mean, at least they can say is no,
right?
Or they could say yes, and then it's a win-win. So I wouldn't like always just shut the door just because, you know, the budget was created and it's, you know.
Right, but even in the fact that, hey, we don't have the budget, let me go talk to my supervisor and see if we can include it this year. Or and that supervisor says no. The fact that you still went and advocated on my behalf is going to carry a lot of weight with me.
Right. And we'll include it in next year's budget.
Exactly.
Or we'll consider including it in next year's budget. That's how you start to change some of those habits.
All right. So switching gears just a little bit. When you working with Leadership Jacksonville and you worked with a number of leaders in the community, what would you say are some of the skills or trainings or area of emphasis organizations should be looking at for effective leadership development? What are some of those things that, or even opportunities that they should create to really have that effective leadership development for their employees?
Well, you know, I'm going to be biased because we operate a leadership development program specifically for employees. Ours is really focused on civic engagement and leadership development. And so one of the things that I pride ourselves on for Leadership Jacksonville, what has been built, is that it really takes a deep dive into our community. So I would say organizations that have an interest in having their employees, team members more involved in the community, what does that look like? Mm-hmm. How do you do it? How do you become more educated in what's going on in the community and ways to get more sort of involved and invested? And so that's, I think, what our sweet spot is we work with corporations and partners to ensure that their team members have the opportunity to learn about this city that they call home for, you know, have called home their whole life or are new to the area and are still learning. But there's so much rich history here that not a lot of people know about, and also a lot of inequities that is important for us to recognize and know and have that lens and understanding while we continue to serve in organizations and in, you know, volunteer leadership roles. So for us, that's our sweet spot. So we really focus on also connecting like-minded leaders together. Because we can provide great programming, but I think it's the connectivity between other leaders that are doing, you know, great work in different industries that can, you know, have those interesting conversations mm-hmm. that are outside of, you know, the loop of who you currently see on a regular basis at work or, you know, within your neighborhood or within, you know, some of the establishments that you frequent. And so that's where the rich dialogue starts to happen, is when you get some people together that are all passionate about the city right. and have different ideas on ways to make it better. So so that's what LJ has been working on for quite some time.
So I'm going to take from that the importance of networking, just mm-hmm. being able to have conversations with other people who are in same fields, different fields, but positions of leadership, carrying that same passion and being able to discuss experiences, wisdom, approaches, a number of things that can happen out of networking. And so maybe just the opportunity to build some networking skills and networking relationships.
I mean, this is a relationship business. It's a relationship world, right? And so those skills, networking, relationship building are here to stay. I mean, we all crave a sense of belonging, and that's mm-hmm. really what relationship building is. And so to me, that is definitely core to being successful in any, you know, position or in life. And I would also share that just building that, we go back to trust. We talk about trust so much, but building up that trust so you can have some of these tougher conversations with people that have different viewpoints than you. If I haven't built that trust with you, I may not have my effective listening ears on, mm-hmm. I may be, you know, defensive to what I'm hearing. And so that is something that we really try to build quickly within the group. And I think because we, the specific program meets for a year, that, you know, over time you start to build that muscle.
So you really have to have that time allocated for the development of trust. That's not going to just happen overnight.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And so we pride ourselves on that. And then I think just encouraging a conversation, but also bringing in subject matter experts mm-hmm. That are highly respected in the community, have done a lot for the community and come in with pretty staggering information. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, you're respectful of the people in the group, but also the speakers and facilitators that are a part of the programming and the curriculum, I think is what makes what we do really important and highly sought after.
And so, and even just looking for these types of leadership groups in your local communities, I know in Nashville, there's the Young Leaders Council. Mm-hmm. There are lots of these leadership development groups all over.
Yes.
And really looking for those opportunities. And for those people who are in Jacksonville who might be interested, when do applications for the next Leadership Jacksonville group open up?
So our nominations are actually open right now. Individuals can self-nominate, nominate a friend or a colleague, or have their employer nominate them, and they close December 15th. But the actual formal application for the adult program will open up at the beginning of January.
All right, fantastic.
Soon.
Oh, very soon. Really soon.
Yes.
All right, just enough time to get the holidays over it and get right to work. All right. So in wrapping up, I always like to really leave everyone with the one big takeaway, right? So if you're thinking about leaders of organizations, people who are in HR, people who are leading teams and managing employees, they had one thing that they took away from our conversation today. What would you say the most important thing is?
You know, when in preparation for this, I was thinking about, I'm a big Ted Lasso fan. Uh-huh. And one of the things that he talks about, one of the life lessons, is be curious, not judgmental. Mm-hmm. And so I think in that vein of just learning about other people, either those that you are interviewing for positions or learning about your colleagues in general, just being curious and being that person to person, human to human, getting to know them on a personal level and understanding more about them and their interests and career goals and, you know, their personal lives and things of that nature. I just always sort of carry that around with me as I want to approach life and work with curiosity. Mm-hmm. So I think there are reasons for the way that things are. However, that doesn't mean that they always need to stay the same. Mm-hmm. And so for me, in some of the conversations we had about ways that we can provide more professional development opportunities for people of color, curiosity. How can I help? What would you like to do? Who can I connect you with? Who is a good referral for you? What would you like to learn more about? Just some of those questions I think could really benefit our entire teams.
Yeah. It's so funny. I have seen one episode of Ted Lasso. I take that back. I've seen two, but the one I saw was the dart game where he did the be curious, not judgmental, with a really illuminating example. So I definitely have a great appreciation for that. I think for me, a similar platitude in you want something different, then you're going to have to do something different.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So be that you want more diversity in the application pool that you're getting, you're going to have to really look at the practices of how you are recruiting. I really love the looking at different areas of expertise and experience to assess skills that are needed for the job. Mm-hmm. Because it's not that you're in any way lowering the bar, but you're just seeing, am I seeing them in other aspects of somebody's life experience? And so doing that and then, again, creating those different opportunities and conversations, I think sometimes we rely very heavily on doing the same thing for everybody. But my example for that is all the kids in the classroom don't need glasses, but we do all need to be able to see the board, right? So everything doesn't have to be cookie cutter. What's going to work for one employee isn't going to necessarily work for another, but you have to know those employees well enough to be able to make those determinations of difference. So really trying some different things and let's see if we get some different and better results.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, Gracie, thank you so much for joining me in the conference room today. I think this has been a really empowering discussion, and I hope that it's been extremely beneficial for some people out there listening. There's so much wisdom that you've shared, and I want to thank you for sharing that with us today. And thanks for joining us. And again, the nominations, if you were in Jacksonville, the nomination process is happening right now. So just go to leadershipjacksonville.org.
Leadershipjax.org.
All right. Leadershipjax, JAX.org. All right. And then complete that nomination process and find out more about the process and what happens in this year-long program. But I know several people who've been through it and it's really, really beneficial. So thank you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. This was fantastic.
All right. And thank you for joining us for this episode of the Business of Race podcast. If you want to get more information about what we're discussing, be sure to subscribe. Just click below, as well as give us a thumbs up and like us to really help us know that we are meeting those content needs that you have. It's been fabulous. Thank you so much. And we look forward to seeing you next week in the conference room.